NCBVI Commission Meeting, November 20, 2004, Tape 1.
Commissioners, to the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired is in order. We're going to move as quickly as possible. I want to welcome everybody. And we didn't put on the agenda specific times for things because of the public hearing. We didn't know how long that would be. And so it seemed like we'd be guessing wrong no matter what. Now let's see, has anyone come in since the public hearing?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, so we can put the names of those who, you know, answered when we went around the room before on the commission board.
Barbara?
Minutes, yes.
Could I make one request in that?
Sure.
I believe we do have a sign language interpreter here.
Okay.
It would be helpful if people identified themselves when they did speak. And I should have said, this is Bob.
Yes, actually, I appreciate that as chairman, too. If for whatever reason people are trying to get my attention, if you would say your name, then I can recognize you, and that would be helpful to the sign language interpreter as well. So that will be good for everybody. Okay, I want to also announce that we do have public comment periods in the agenda. Those of you who have been attending our meetings for a long time know that we used to take public comments pretty much any time. We have changed our format some, and we try to make sure that we have public comments interspersed throughout the meetings. So during those times, that is when the public will have the opportunity to make comments either on whatever the agenda item was that was just before that or anything else. If there's a reason that you need to leave and you have something that you wanted to make sure you got onto the meeting, you can let me know and we can be flexible about that, because I don't ever want to not have somebody have an opportunity to make a comment. We always appreciate it when people come, and we don't want people to feel either unwelcome or unable to have their opportunity to give us information or ask us questions. So we also do tape our meetings, and we ask that people speak up when you do have comments so that the tape can receive what you're saying. Those can be made available after the meetings. You can get a hold of the Commission for the Blind, and they're made available to all of the offices, and individuals can request a copy on tape. The draft minutes also appear on our website, and so, you know, they're very accessible to people. And we do encourage people to come to the meeting. We also encourage you to review it if you want to. The next item has to do with lunch arrangements, and did you want to talk about that, Pearl?
Yes, this is Pearl. That is all set up at about noon. A pizza and salad lunch will be brought in. Val Peary and Deanne Johnson from the Omaha office worked together on that and came up with a good lunch that we will be pretty reasonable. The commission will just provide that. You know, we really just had to guess. I had heard, sounded like there would be more from Omaha, which I think there will be a little later, but they're over at Yonkers right now. So we probably guessed more than we need, but we will.
Is there a big sale at Yonkers?
There's a fundraiser for various groups today.
Oh, okay.
So it's all taken care of. When it first comes, if you maybe take smaller portions to, so we make sure we do have adequate, but I think we'll have more than enough.
Okay, and we do appreciate that.
Well, thanks to Deanne and Val, they did a great job of getting information to what...
Actually, Deanne did, oh, this is Val, I did very little.
That's great.
Okay, in terms of other logistics, there will be at least two things added to the new business on the agenda. And those are that we will be having a newsline report, and also we will have consideration for approval of rule. You know, we had the public hearing. It's now the commission board's next job to consider approval for rule, and then it goes on to the attorney general and that sort of thing. And I neglected to put on the agenda that we would be doing that. I put the update thing in old business, but forgot to put the consideration for approval in new business. Okay, I will quickly read the agenda, and then we will continue. Minutes of the August 7, 2004 meeting. The focus topic will be services to deafblind consumers, and then there's a public comment period, and then a break. And, you know, whatever, whenever the lunch period falls, that's, you know, that's when we will do that. report from the placement committee, report from the chairman, public comment, report from the executive director, public comment, old business, which includes rule update, budget update, website update, Friends of the Commission update, NIS update, status of the taped public meeting, educational materials, training for commissioners, meeting of commissioners and staff, mission statement, job description, public comment, break, new business, correspondence concerning VIPs, focus topic for next meeting, and then of course we'll put in the newsline report and the consideration for approval of rule, public comment, and then adjourn. Is there anything else that needs to be added to the agenda at this point? If not, we'll move along to the minutes of the August 7, 2004 meeting. Bill had sent an email message that said that we had reversed who moved and who seconded for chairman. His remembering was that you moved Bob and that he seconded rather than the other way around. And so he isn't here today to submit that correction, but I had told him that we would put it up there. Okay. So does anybody have any other additions or corrections to the August 7th minutes? Is there a motion to...
I make a motion that we...
I'll second.
Okay, Nancy moves and Dorothy seconds that we approve the August 7th minutes as corrected. Is there a discussion? Is there a call for the question?
Call for the question.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, they're approved as corrected, and they need to be moved now from draft to approved status on the website. Okay.
Excuse me, this is Pearl.
Yes.
So we need to make that change in the minutes that are there, actually correct the document, and then move it into the approved?
I believe that's the correct procedure, yes.
Okay. So we will fix the document, and Val, did you get this? I have to admit, I was... checking on something when you were doing the detail of that. Did you get that, Val?
This is Val. I know you said it was reversed, but I'm assuming in the minutes it'll say who did what, and I just reverse it, but I didn't.
Yeah, Bob Burns moved and Bill Arrester seconded. That's the way it should be.
On which?
On the August, on the
nominating
of the chairman.
Second.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda, and at this point, Hubert, if you want to set the timer for an hour, we're going to have our focus topic, and I've been really looking forward to this. Cheryl has sent some materials to us ahead of time, and you know, we'd like to invite you now, Cheryl, to talk with us about services to deafblind consumers.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me join you.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
I have five things that I wanted to share with you and also open up for comments and concerns from anyone. So if you cannot hear me, please tell me to speak up. If I talk too loud, tell me to shut up, okay? I won't be offended, I promise. Okay, one of the things you may be aware about, 5.5 years ago, we were lucky in that Bob Eaton and several staff wrote a grant for on the Nebraska Commission for the Blind, Vision, and Hearing of individuals who have a dual loss of vision and hearing. And Bob was very successful with that grant writing, so we owe our thanks to him for writing that grant.
Yes.
And that became successful, and Nebraska was accepted as an affiliate of Helen Catalyst National Center in New York. And we were, the last applicant to be accepted as an affiliate, so we're very lucky. I became Deafblind Project Coordinator 4 years ago, and I'm happy to say that things have been really moving along in the last 4 years. I just kind of want to update you with some of the things that's happening. Well, first of all, I want to share with you what the mission of our project is. The mission of the project is to expand and improve services impacting the lives of individuals of all ages who have a combined hearing and vision loss and their families to enable them to live independently in the community of their choice. Who is considered deafblind? An individual who is deafblind means any individual having a hearing and vision loss, the combination of which cause extreme difficulty in attaining independence in daily life activities. And that is found in our old project fact sheet. And I just wanted to reflect that. We have 7 objectives that we follow when we provide services to the community and the state. And quarterly I provide reports to Helen Keller National Center, and you find that in our website. And these are the steps that I follow when I put out the quarterly report, okay? The 7 steps are continue a process for identifying the deafblind population and conduct a need assessment. That was number 1. Number 2, collaborate with and provide consultation and in-service training to NCBVI staff, other professionals and agencies serving deafblind individuals, and assist with case management and coordination of services. Also to include general non-professional public awareness regarding the needs of deafblind individuals and their families. 3, provide training to individuals who are deafblind and their families to promote advocacy and self-determination. Collaborate in the coordination of personal futures planning for deafblind youth in transition from school to adult services. 5, facilitate and guide program development for hand-in-hand deafblind peer support groups, and explore and investigate the possibility of starting a youth or teen group. Number 6, identify assistive technology used by deafblind individuals for employment and independent living. 7, identify and increase the number of employed deafblind individuals. Those are the 7 project objectives that we follow as we serve individuals throughout the state. In my focus report, I owe Maybethan to the project objective, which I just read to you, and a quarterly report. I did email that to you as an attachment. I hope that you had an opportunity to read through that. If not, let me know, and I could resend it or get that to you. It's also on our website. Okay? The next one, number two, focus point number two, is one that I'm really excited about. And I want to share this with you. That is our Helen Keller Deafblind Registry and the statistics based on that registry. When I started 4 years ago, we were running the backup and explaining that nationwide, Helen Keller had been working to get statistics of who has a dual loss, so that, when it comes to funding or services, we're able to take that information and say, this is the population that we're serving. This is what's happening. And I'm really excited because this is the first year that we have some really concrete statistics that we can go by. And I did email you part of that, and then I realized that my computer was playing tricks on me, so I didn't want to resend that to you.
Okay.
I only sent you the part about the vision loss, but didn't send you the part about the hearing loss.
Yeah.
So, okay, I will resend that, but I do want to share with you what that part was about. Beth Jordan, our regional rep from Shawnee, Mission, Kansas, and I did a presentation to Boys Town National Research Hospital 2 days ago. And just before we got there, we received from Helen Keller National Center a population breakdown, a graph of the four old regions that Beth serves in the Great Plains region. There are four states that she serves: Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska. And we tried to see if she could back that to me, so see if it would work, and for some reason, if I'm not back, that the email will make a copy of that. So that's when I went and broke it down in narrative description, and I will go back and redo that once my computer's up and running again. So I will do that. But I just want to kind of share with you, in my narrative, I said, the population of known individuals on the Helen Keller Registry for November 2004. Nationally, now this is what is troubling, is that we know that our population is aging. We're looking at individuals who were in the war, individuals who left the Vietnam War, individuals who don't realize, individuals in nursing homes, care facilities, they don't realize that, you know, they're counted as having a dual loss. This is nationwide, not just Nebraska. Okay? And they're saying nationwide, they only know of 10,000 people. No, we're talking 50 states plus, you know, territories, and you know there's got to be more individuals than 10,000. They are, Helen Keller, New York is nationally estimating that there's at least 70,000. It's just finding that population. In my narrative, I did on a rating scale of 0 to 5. What I meant by that, and I will clarify that in my next email to you, is that the other four states in the Great Plains region, they're looking at the population from 0 to 500 possible. 500, because none of those four states have gotten up to 500 yet. Okay? So we just kind of put a range in there. Kansas has the highest population of 474 known. But we have to remember that that is because Kansas has been providing services to the deafblind a lot longer than the other three states in the Great Plains region. So if you take a look at that and you say, oh my goodness, why is Nebraska low? You have to remember, we just started 4 years ago. And when I started 4 years ago, there was only 68 individuals that we knew throughout the state. Because we have wonderful staff people throughout the state that have been working, making sure the individuals know about our services for dual loss. We have been able to get statistics for 220 individuals that we know of right now. I take that information and share that with Helen Keller National Center in New York. and they also shared that with Beth Jordan. I want you to know that that information is confidential. A lot of times when I meet with individuals, because of identity that people are concerned, well, do I need to get my social security number? No, it's optional. An old salesman's gonna come and call on people. I know that's another concern people have. And I can identify with that. You know, if I thought I was given statistics and some salesman could come back down my door, and I would be reluctant to do that too. But what happens is that after I submit it, then Beth Jordan lets them know that, yes, we got this. This is now in the national system. They have questions, they can contact me or her, or even Tom Keller in New York. That's what happens with the statistics when I get it. And we can also go back to that if we needed it for grabbing or whatever. I wanted to share with you that the number that we know of for Iowa is 240, Kansas 474, Missouri 351, Nebraska 220. And that's pretty good when you think that Nebraska is the last state admitted as an affiliate, and all the others have been affiliates for a long time. Even some of the states that have been affiliates, who we know that there's a high population of individuals with the dual law, like Louisiana, they have a high population of individuals with special interest. But I don't know what the count is, but the last time I did here, it was pretty low. So this is something that we can be proud of our staff and our individuals working together as a team, getting that information and serving them. Because of the vision law, and I also have cause of hearing loss, and I will share that with you too. That's the part that got omitted from my computer. Cause of vision loss of individuals with deafblindness from Nebraska on the National Registry. Age-related, that's 68% of that population of 220 individuals. The top cause is macular degeneration, glaucoma, and cataract. What is the word I have a hard time saying? I'm gonna let Nancy say the word because I can't say last name.
Congenital.
Thank you, Nancy. In my next lifetime, I'm gonna be able to say that word. The cause is the top of rubella, retinitis pigmentosa, retinopathy of prematurity, and other disorders. Other health issues, 11%, and the cause is diabetes, optic nerve atrophy, blood-related or unknown ones. Trauma, 5%. Tumor, accident, cancer, or detached retina. Those are the population with and what caused the vision loss. The hearing loss of that population is, okay, age-related, that's 31%, and the main cause is persecution or heredity, okay? Other health issues, 29%. Ear infections, mumps, or unknown. Now we move over to
congenital.
Thank you. And trauma. And they're both broken down to 20% each. That's interesting. So 20% congenital is caused by sensorial, neural, hearing loss, the rubella, birth defects, or other disorders. Trauma at 20% is scar tissue, noise, fever, tumor, cancer, or accident. It's really kind of interesting because when I asked about scar tissue, that was kind of interesting. What that is a lot of times, you know, individuals, when they become older, and this isn't always true, but sometimes, the flap inside the ear, it loses its elasticity, and it kind of, it falls a bit. Like you know how when a person ages and sometimes their skin, you know, becomes loose, that happens in the ear too. And that can prevent an individual from hearing clearer too. Or it could also cause you from ear infections, or from things going in the ear. Again, this is not with everyone. But that's what that one was. I thought that was kind of interesting. Any questions? Am I rambling?
No, you're doing fine.
Fine? Okay. I'm not rambling yet, okay. Okay, that was the deaf-blind registry statistic. The third part is called LB Legislative Bill 22. I don't know if you're aware of this, but last year, the Nebraska legislature signed into law a new bill called for Sign Language Interpreters Licensing Bill. What that means is that agencies like us, the legislature, or any agency that receives federal or state funding must hire a licensed interpreter for when we work with individuals who are deaf or deaf-blind. The reason for that is for our protection and the consumer's protection, so that we're getting qualified interpreters and not just pulling someone in off the street. Even though that bill was signed last year, it hasn't been, it hasn't gone into effect yet. Because what's happening is the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing and the board for this is working out all the details for like what's in Nebraska. What's in Nebraska? There's only like about two interpreters, and they do not have the higher level to interpret. But they are sometimes the only choice you have if you have a person who is deaf or deaf-blind. So they're trying to iron out all the details with that. What this means for us is that anytime we hire interpreters, that we need to go through the Nebraska Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing to get those interpreters. That way we know we're getting licensed interpreters. And they are working with the licensing process right now. If we don't, this is what can happen. We could be fined for not doing that. Other states have had this implemented for quite a while. And I was looking at some of the states and what the fine is. It's pretty steep. I don't think we can afford it. 501 states, and what another state had up to almost $1,000.
Oh, boy.
So I wanted you to be aware of that at any time, you know, if our staff or anyone hires an interpreter, this is the guidelines we have to follow. Even though it's not in effect right now, I made it a policy to go ahead and go through the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing just so that we can be on the safe side.
This is Pearl. May I ask a question?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, when we have information out about a meeting such as this one, we say, get in touch with the office if you need an interpreter or other accommodation. Do we need to set enough warning, or how do we know in time to get an interpreter? I don't know quite how to say that, but you know, if somebody let us know yesterday that they want to attend and they need an interpreter, what would we do?
Okay, that's a very good question. I'm glad you brought that up, Pearl. That seems to be addressed. First of all, I notify interpreters as soon as I know. Because, first of all, a lot of interpreters throughout the state are tied up in the mainstream system with the kids in school. So, the minute I know, I try to let the Commission for the Deaf know and try to get an interpreter as quickly as possible. For example, I knew several weeks ago that I was going to need an interpreter for something. I don't remember what it was. And it wasn't until the last minute they were able to find an interpreter that was available. So that's what we're up against. Finding interpreters is very, very difficult. Now, there's been a couple of times when I don't have enough notice and I contact them right away. Because most interpreters need to know at least 48 hours in advance if they can. Now, some even have a 48 to 24 hour cancellation policy. If they the deaf person didn't show up or whatever. We, and the interpreter showed up for this meeting today, for example. We still would have to pay that interpreter, whatever the fee is. Interpreters are independent contractors. They can name their own fee. And the fees are anywhere from $30 up to, I think, the highest I've seen was $50, $75. Is that about right, Bob?
The highest I've seen is $50.
$50 is the highest that we have? Okay.
But
so, you know, and we can't particularly say, we can ask for someone who's not going to charge more, but chances of finding an interpreter at all is where, you know, the difficulty is. So we have to go with what we can get. Now, the other thing is, some interpreters have what they call weekend fees, which means they're even higher than a normal. Like, for example, they say, okay, my normal fee is $35, 2 hours minimum. That means most interpreters have a 2 hour minimum, which means that, like if I say my old interpreter fee is $25 per hour, 2 hour minimum, that means right off the bat, I'm going to get $50. Right off the bat, no matter what. Then I charge $25 each additional hour. I'm just using this as an example to give you an idea of how they do that. If it's, we have to cancel, we have to pay the cancellation fee too. Like, for example, today there was a blizzard and whatever. So I try to let them know at least 24 hours in advance if I can.
This is Nancy. I was just going to add that there may be situations where we can't get an interpreter if it's short notice. If they called, you know, maybe late yesterday afternoon, maybe we wouldn't be able to get one because there is a real shortage of interpreters. So it's really important for meetings like this that Cheryl knows and can help coordinate that. You know, so 1, 2, 3 weeks, if not more, notice is really important.
And if I'm not available, go ahead and contact the Commission for the Deaf and let them know what they need is. You know, that's the important thing. You know, I'm usually around, but if I'm not, like if I was in Nebraska for several days and you need an interpreter, and you email me or call me and I'm not there, go ahead and contact the Commission. The Omaha office in the Commission for the Deaf is the one that handles the old interpreter. Now, say you don't have interpreters right there or anything like that, what happens is that they have what you can call and request an interpreter, and they will do that search. That way, none of us really have time to call all the interpreters throughout the state, but this is their job, and they can do that and place that. What they would need, if you do call for an interpreter, they need the contact name of the person who will be coordinating the, like in this case, me, what the event is, how long, where, date, time, all of that, any special needs. For example, I always request that interpreters dress in dark, navy blue, or black. The reason for that, I think this is very important for all of us to know, is that even a person with low vision, lip reading even, it's better to lip read if someone's wearing a dark color, because light colors are very, very hard to see, especially for a person who has Caucasian skin. However, if your skin is darker, like Asian, Native American, African American, then you can wear like yellow, cream, or white. The contrast helps you see and to focus better for the signing and for lip reading. Now, sometimes interpreters get away from that because they say, well, if I'm interpreting for a person in a normal day-to-day life, they don't mean to have that dark colors and things like that. So I always say when I do presentations for new students wanting to become interpreters, I say, don't go by that, because even people with normal vision, if they have to lip read all day long, if they have a cold, or they have contact, and their eyes are messed up, they need to be able to see what's being signed. And that's a really important thing. Please keep that in mind if you ever hire an interpreter. Be sure to tell them to wear dark, plain colors. That's the most important thing. I've been known to tell interpreters, okay, what I do is sometimes I'll bring a real big jacket and ask them, you know, will you please, you know, put it on so I can see it. Well, that's what they've been embarrassed one time, though next time they will wear the glasses. They're going to remember that. They know, okay, I need to be aware of this, aware of being blue and black. I don't do this all the time, but I do this to help them remember, you know, this is important.
Most of the time, because this is Nancy, it's because interpreters never remember. They never remember to wear black most of the time.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
This is Nancy Altman, and I have a question about, you said these interpreters are certified. How much training do they go through to be certified? And where exactly do they learn that, like from the college, or do the does the Commission for the Deaf Blind have a school that teaches them?
Okay, that's a very good question. Certification criteria is very rigid. Yes, the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing does provide some training and guidance for them to where they can go. Like, I work at Community College, Metro Community College, you know, Lincoln, Southeast Community College. There are several places that offer advanced training for them. But also, like any of us, they have to keep up their license every year. Also, they have to pay quite a bit to get that license. And what they do, they're graded on receptive and expressive skills. Receptive, getting the information from a person who is deaf and deaf-blind. Now, because our culture of deaf and deaf-blind is so varied, we're talking about a person who may have very low verbal skills to a person who may be very advanced, you know, communication skills. So these interpreters have to be on top of that and be able to do that range of services. There are, I think, three or four levels of what they call quality testing that they have to do. I heard that now also Boytown National Research Hospital is also working with that and providing the tests and things like that. So we've come a long way from when I first had an interpreter 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Oh, wow, I'm getting old.
This is Nancy. I was just going to add that Cheryl has been presenting to all the different colleges with programs, you know, to discuss the different issues and situations that deafblind persons encounter. She's on their agenda every year to present, and as a result of that, there is a growing number of interpreters for deafblind individuals, you know, which there's been a real shortage of that over the years.
This is Nancy Olmigan. How long is the course that they must take to do that? And she mentioned refreshing every year. Do they need to go back and do a full course, or is it just like a test that they take?
Okay, during the training, it goes anywhere from 2 years to 4 years. It depends on, you know, where they go for the training.
Okay.
Now, but to keep up the credentials, that's a good ongoing process, because once they get their own training, then they have to feel well, then they have to go to the Commission for the Deaf and Blind up there and be tested so that they can get their level one certification, their level two or level three. And some interpreters take them years and years and years to pass that. That's how intense it is.
Wow. Thank you.
But usually it's just like workshops.
Yeah.
So many workshops a year, you know, to meet their certification.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I guess I don't know if I asked Nancy or Cheryl, but specifically, what kind of services do we offer to the deafblind person? Is it learning sign? Is it learning cane travel?
Our services are the same services that we provide any other consumer who are blind. We offer the same services for individuals who are deaf blind. The only difference would be like, maybe the person needs to know more about what technologies that help them in their job and community, what other resources are out there. How can they go about doing things that require self-advocacy services? We do a lot of self-advocacy training with individuals on a one-to-one basis. How to access the community, how to access jobs, how to speak up for yourself, you know, how to get to where you're going, how to get interpreters, you know, communicating your needs. That is one of the biggest things we do. Nancy also reminded me that I also teach science to our staff, and currently for the last 2 years I've been teaching science to our Lincoln District staff. And Bob Eaton has also been taking the science that we've been working on, and he's developing a manual of descriptive science, because there's nothing out there that's descriptive on how to do science for individuals who are blind or deaf. So Bob's working on that. And I've been lucky to have great people to work with in our staff who are taking the class. For example, we have Bob, Shane, and Amy. They're terrific people to work with. You have to ask them about their experience when we went out to breakfast one morning. Shane almost ended up with what? 12 pancakes? 12
eggs.
12 eggs, yeah. But that was good because he was a good exposure to how signs are different, you know, from person to person, even though you're signing the same thing. So I think it worked quite well.
Had a hearty appetite, I hope.
I have also been working with some clients in dynamics. I have one individual that I'm working with who's doing tactile science. And whenever I meet with this individual, I teach him new science. And I saw this individual yesterday, and an individual went with me to do a presentation for a new sign language student who are interested in becoming interpreters. And they had a lot of questions for the person, and the person was having a great time. So I taught him a new sign, because he was flirting with all the beautiful interpreters. I said, oh, you have fun in flirting, you know. But he liked that new sign, flirting. So when he said, oh, flirting, I like that sign.
Dorothy, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Do you want more specifics?
Well, I mean, like the, Bob talked about tactical signing, what is that, feeling the signs, or that's what I'd like to know more about.
Okay, tactical sign language is more for individuals who are deaf-blind. What it is, okay, a person with visual capabilities is able to see what signs are being done. Because sign language is basically very, very visual. With tactile signs, what it is a person puts their hand on another person's hand and they feel what's being signed, or fingerspell for that matter. And we have several individuals that we do that with. Some people, they find that they need close-up range interpreters, or some people have what's called tracking. Interpret that we an interpreter assigned to them, but they're tracking where the hand is. They will hold the hand where they can see it better, what range that they can see. So there is a wide range of communication possibilities, but that's what tactile is.
Okay, tactile signing. Can it be the communication be fairly speedy, or is it a slow process? I guess I'm talking about a neighbor who is deaf-blind, and his son signs for him in his palm, but he does it like letter by letter by letter, and it seems to be very slow.
It's an individual preference, you know, and also that depends on where the person over certain times, or things like, for example, there's a school in New York called Rochester, Rochester, New York, where their communication is totally finger-strung all the time. And some of them sign things down really fast, some really slow. So that's an individual preference. Most individuals that I know use what's called total communication, signs, voice, lipping, tactile, the whole thing. It depends on the individual. Some people are slow, some people are fast. You have with Braille.
This is Bob.